Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We have special guest Dave Redden. Dave Redden and I, how far back do we go? 30 years?
Bob, every bit of it at least. 1987?
Yeah.
So I guess that's almost 30.
Anyway, Dave is a federal benefit consultant. He teaches retirement seminars, mid-career seminars, beginning career seminars for NITP, and he has his own company, New Life Retirement.
That's it? Sure.
All right. And you also write articles. You are a retirement counselor at several agencies, but he's also an economist.
Right.
So he'll be able to lead us through some benefits, but the real focus today is on books. So we're going to talk about TSP withdrawals. We'll get into investment strategies, and then I love your 10-step program that we're going to talk about in a while. So, Dave, let's start out at the top of our bullet points. And what are the strengths and weaknesses of the TSP and or IRAs? We could spend a week on this.
At least. Well, thank you for having me on the show, Bob. It's always a pleasure. Mm-hmm. We never get to spend enough time together. We're both way too busy. And so let me say, May the 4th be with you, of course. You know, today being May 4th, Star Wars Day. Okay, right.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Yeah, right, good. All right, so obviously, you know, one of the things about the TSP is, and I absolutely love the TSP, is that it's got some wonderful capabilities, but it has a few weaknesses. And as you and I have been doing this for many years, we've seen the thrift get better and better and better and better all the time. And I know that's going to continue. You had Greg Long on here, the executive director of the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, about a month ago.
Exactly.
It was great to hear Greg, you know, great guy, and obviously an agency that's becoming just evolving in front of our eyes. It's just neat to see that.
They make a very good 1-2 punch, he and Kim Weaver. And,
right.
And thoroughly enjoy them. Oftentimes, there'll be a third that they'll bring on, but the third person doesn't talk and just watches us so we don't say anything wrong.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And then they start waving their arms around. Well, let me start off by saying, you know, there's a few things in the thrift that are just dynamite. Now, although it's been in the news a little bit lately, I think the G Fund is just the most incredible fund in the world. Because one thing, it doesn't suffer from any interest rate risk whatsoever. When interest rates go up, the G Fund will go up with it. And, of course, obviously, interest rates have come down over the last 10 years, 12 years, and they've been rather low. But yet the thrift is paying better than, you know, around 2% per year. What are people getting at the banks or credit unions? 0.2?
0.2 if they're lucky.
Yeah, well, 0.21 with compounding. So in 1,000 years, they get $12 of interest. So the G Fund is really awesome. Now, the G Fund, though, is terrible for long-term investing. It's just terrible for that. You know, you're never going to get...
Not because it's a G Fund. It's because of its rate of return.
Right, exactly, okay. Right. Now, it can never be negative, which is an awesome thing, which means really the G Fund is absolutely awesome for income, which is a cornerstone of this 10-step plan for, you know, how do you really do a great job with this TSP after you retire. So I love that. Now, what I also love, the index funds that are in the thrift. Now, index funds are a really boring way for people to invest money, but a really awesome way to try to make money over the long haul. For example, S&P 500 index, the C fund, that's C as in Charlie, C fund in the thrift. I mean, that thing does an incredible job. Every single financial planning firm that has an actively managed fund, the C fund will beat 85 to 90% of them every single year. Jeez. All I have to do is sit back and do nothing and let it do its thing. I love that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What's an index fund?
An index fund is where we look at a particular part of the financial sector, and we don't actually try to actively manage anything. There's nobody there to say, this is hot, this is not, sell this, buy this. No, we as that underlying assets in the index change position, then it automatically buys and sells to match the index. Index funds are a great way to ride the market, to be the market. We're not trying to beat the market. We're trying to be the market. And if you pick a good index for what your goal is, then it's going to do rather well. You know, we talk about things like diversification. Oh, well, S&P 500, that's 500 of the biggest companies.
That's the C fund, right?
Yeah, that's the C fund. That's 500 of the largest companies publicly owned in America. That's not too undiversified, to say the least.
And what's the S fund?
The S fund is, in a sense, the rest of the United States stock market. Obviously, smaller firms, yet some of those are still pretty large. Some of those would be what we'll call mid-caps. But then we get some rather small ones. Now, the obvious feeling with the S fund is, geez, smaller companies, these things are a little bit more risky. So a good investor knows that you don't take risk unless you can get potential reward. And so if we look at the S fund performance over many, many, many years, certainly if we go back to 1988, when the thrift board, you know, allowed for other funds besides the G fund, if we go back to 1926, so we take into account the Great Depression, we'll see that the S fund, S as in Sam, will outperform the C fund, that is the S&P 500 index, by a couple percentage points. And over the long haul, 2 percentage points makes a big difference. Think about like a 30-year mortgage. What if your interest rate changed by 2% on a 30-year mortgage? What would that do to your monthly payment? So the S fund's got higher highs, but it's got lower lows. But over the long haul, if you just be the market, stay in it for a long period of time, you do rather well in the S fund. But you have to be able to ignore it or enjoy the ride,
right.
One of the two. Right. So I love the index funds, but the most important thing, I think, is the incredibly low expense ratios that we have in the thrift savings plan. That's an awesome thing. Maybe one other great advantage would be that I feel, personally, that there's a little greater safety with the thrift board having these control over the funds. There is no vault where the employees could go in and help themselves. They don't have really great lavish holiday parties. They're not using that money to entertain their big clients. I really like that. There's no profit motive for them, and there's just the only motive they have is to manage that money as properly as they can, fiscally responsible, legally responsible, without any of these things getting in the way, like, gee, your boss has come in and said, you better sell a bunch of these shares. You know, I saw that on The Sopranos one time. It was kind of funny. I know that doesn't happen in the real world.
Oh, of course not.
Of course not. Right.
All righty. Now, the TSP has these different funds, and they have the G fund. But outside of the TSP and the IRA world, could you, quote, match the theoretical makeup of the index funds?
You can with ease, obviously with slightly higher expenses. Now, obviously, if you go into some of these firms that are active managers, where they're wealth management advisory firms, they will take a fee on top of your entire account balance each year. And this fee goes for whatever it goes for, their profit, their et cetera. And then if you tell them, look, all I want is index funds, then they basically do nothing except maybe go out and market more people with accounts and get 3% from them. Now, I'm not trying to downplay wealth management advisories, you know, the quality of their services or the value of their services. But clearly, for people that are smaller term investors that have, you know, $1 million or less, or you know, maybe $1.5 million or less, these people are not going to be getting the first class treatment, but they will be getting a first class bill. And so the active management funds, the wealth management advisory firms, you know, I generally tell people, you know, you can do that, but I'm not so sure you really want to do that, when in fact you can just do this on your own. Go directly to companies such as a Vanguard, a Fidelity, not to give those guys a commercial or free airplay here, but, you know, they are very, very inexpensive. They're not as inexpensive as the thrift, though. The TSB's got the lowest fees. The best you can do right now on an S&P 500 index fund, which is the same as the C fund and the thrift, is about 0.05%, and that's if you have $10,000 or more at Vanguard in their S&P 500. You get the Admiral shares. I've always liked that Admiral. I was an Army guy, but I like being an Admiral, you know. And you know, I have money there, so you know, I want to tell you, it works rather well. It's a very low fee. But at the same fund at the thrift, 0.028% last year, according to Greg Long. And that's a bit of a difference, but it's not massive. You know what's incredible? Some of my friends, their kids are getting jobs. They're getting their first jobs with a 401k. And they say they don't know anything about it. Can you pick some funds? Oh, sure enough, there's an S&P 500 index fund in their 401k. Total fees for the same fund, 1.3% per year. tough to make money that way when you're making everyone else their money. So I do like IRAs from another standpoint, which is actually a strength of IRAs, but a weakness of the TSP. With IRAs, assume that you have lots of different assets in your IRA, different funds, cash accounts, etc. You can take any money you want, anytime you want, from any one of your funds or assets that you would like. So it's what I've always called on-demand withdrawal. I need some money, I get it. I cannot do that with the TSP. It's very difficult for me to do anything like that at the TSP. So what I kind of have to do is, given the TSP framework, I have to structure my TSP account as well as move money into my IRA so that I can have on-demand withdrawals from the IRA, and I'm going to use income from the TSP from a single fund. And I bet you know which fund.
The G fund.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it works actually pretty well.
Now, boy, everybody's got their seatbelts tightened after what you just did. It was very good, but it was very profound.
You know, that's a funny thing, Bob. One of my adventures that I like to do when I get some time off is I go mountain climbing. And I get out there and I go backpacking and I sit up on top of a mountain. And you know what I think about when I'm backpacking in the Rocky Mountains?
The G Fund. What else?
I think about TSP withdrawal strategy, Bob. I've been doing it for years, pontificating on a mountaintop about thrift savings plan withdrawals.
When's the last time you took off? 1988?
No, actually, I took off late summer. I went on a 2-week backpacking trip in the Rocky Mountains.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a nut.
All righty. So we got the Roth accounts that can either be in a in a TSP or an IRA.
Right.
And how's the Roth work? I mean, what's the difference between a Roth IRA and a Roth TSP and a non-Roth?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of differences. And without going through the entire complete breakdown of this thing, the basic idea is that a Roth IRA has a lot more capability than a Roth 401k. So in this regard, we're not going to distinguish between Roth TSP and a Roth 401k. The IRS has regulations about what you can and cannot do with those things. Now, if we can add in the TSP's fold on this, which is the TSP does not allow for on-demand withdrawal, and the TSP also only allows for pro rata distributions amongst everything. I cannot distribute the assets in my Roth 401k or my Roth TSP differently than my traditional TSP. That's always been a bit of a limitation that I know was originally set up because of error corrections. And then, of course, as I've dug a little deeper, what I found is that in order to do something different than that, the thrift board would have to pour huge amounts of money into their accounting and their bookkeeping system to allow for people to be able to go around and willy-nilly reallocate their Roth differently than their traditional. Now, because of that, then we find that over in the IRA, setting up the Roth IRA is going to be an awesome proposal because you're going to allow for any time I want to, I can convert traditional assets into Roth. I would not want to convert more than I can afford to pay tax on because a Roth conversion is a taxable event. And as you know, of course, with the Pension Protection Act of 2006, beginning January 1st, 2010, no longer do we have any adjusted gross income limitations on doing a Roth conversion. We can convert any amount we want to, no matter what our income is, but obviously it's taxable income, so you never want to convert too much. Now, interestingly, if you're in something like a Vanguard, a Fidelity, or whatever, T. Rowe Price, that if you convert from an S&P 500 index fund that's traditional to an S&P 500 index fund that's Roth at the same company, there's no transaction fee for that, and they don't have to sell shares and then repurchase shares. They simply put, in a sense, an R in front of those shares that have been converted to Roth. Then you get a 1099 in the following January, and you have to pay tax on that. But, of course, you can always use the famous 16-letter word, recharacterizations, which allows you to say, I didn't mean to do that. I would like to send it back over to traditional. As long as it's in the same tax year, you can do those things.
Okay. It's time for us to recharacterize our talk and listen to a message from WEPA that also has a huge tax-free benefit.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WEPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WEPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WEPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WEPA today at waepa.org. WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with Dave Redden. Dave is actually, you're an economist too, right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
and people have accused me of that.
Yeah, so you understand the dollars and cents, but you also understand benefits, and you work at different agencies as a retirement counselor. You do NITP seminars. You do seminars on your own, and it's good to see you again. So let's before we
always my pleasure.
Yeah, before we left, and I'm Bob Lyons, by the way, and I'm a bean counter, so I'm sitting here taking notes from Dave, so I can sound erudite when I go back to work.
Ooh, that's a big word.
Whatever that means. So we were talking before the break about moving money into a Roth and some of the things you had to watch out for, some of the benefits that you should know. You mentioned this recharacterization prior to taking the break, but let's come on back now. The Roth TSP, nothing wrong with the Roth TSP, but over the time since it's been there, people will put money into it that otherwise couldn't put money into a Roth IRA, but with regards to the Roth TSP, income is not an issue. And they thought they were slick. And they put the money in with the idea that they would take it out of the Roth TSP and put it into a Roth IRA. Roth IRAs don't have any required distributions at 70 and a half.
That's a big deal, yeah.
And people couldn't do it, and so they saw this giving up the tax benefit later on in their career or mid-career, but they could get the money into the Roth. The problem was something called mirroring.
Right.
Can you explain that to me, or should I try to explain it?
Well, I'll give it a shot, and then you can decipher it and make sure I said the right thing. Well, basically, what happens with the Roth and traditional TSP is that, let's say, for example, I have three funds. We'll call them funds 1, 2, and 3 in the thrift, and I have 50% in one and 25% in each of the other two. That's 100% of my contribution. And I've decided that I'm giving this money into traditional. Now I want to give it to the Roth. So I say, all right, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have money now, you know, X amount of dollars or percent go into the Roth. Now, when that happens, it's going to go in exactly the same funds that I had in the traditional. And I said, now hold it. That's not what I want to do. With the Roth, I pay no tax on growth. So I really don't want, for example, my Roth to be in a lot of G fund. I don't want to get 2%. I want to get 20% because I'm not going to pay tax on it. So I contact the thrift board, and the thrift board says, well, you just simply need to interfund transfer your money or change your allocation. Oh, okay. So now I'm going to put it as like maybe 50% C fund and 50% S. So then I look at my traditional, and now my traditional is also 50% C and 50% S. What? No, I wanted that to be an income stuff. I wanted some of that to be a G fund. I'm going to be using that for income soon. And then see, I'm now in a catch-22. No matter what I do, I'm going to wind up having the Roth allocated exactly the same as the traditional. Furthermore, when I go to pull money out, now this might hopefully change, but for right now, when I go to pull money out, anytime I take out a dollar, that dollar is allocated between what percent of my total assets are in traditional and what percent are in Roth. And I go, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to touch the Roth yet. I want that to grow. Sorry, that's the way it works, at least for now. Of course, as you know, Greg was on here a month ago, and he said that would be one of the changes they'd like to do, that at retirement, you could take just the Roth portion and move that to a Roth IRA. Because I think they kind of know that a Roth IRA has got real advantages, such as you said, no required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half, which is really a very helpful thing, given how long people live.
Okay, thanks for that explanation.
I hope that was okay.
That was terrific.
All right.
Yeah, we have this outline, but I really like your last bullet point. Don't get mad at me. We can come back to the other ones.
All
but
right,
this
sure.
10-step program.
Oh, okay.
help me, doctor or shrink Dave. And this is a 10-step program for mental health and success and for life.
Yeah, for getting off of the abuse of wealth management advisors is actually what it is. So the idea behind this, of course, is that an individual, and I'm going to just start off and hit a couple of the key steps at the beginning, and then we can talk about that. So the first thing is we have to understand that the thrift is very good at some things and not good at others, that IRAs are very good at some things and not as good at others. So we want to take advantage of the strengths out of both and minimize the weaknesses. All right, so what's the TSP really great at? It's great for income with the G fund. Now, it's not great for being able to take on-demand withdrawals, as we've already mentioned. So step one is I determine basically my income needs in retirement. Now, you know, there are various ways to do that. One is to sit there and write it down and try to do worksheets. Yeah. Some people will do this. Take 70% of your current gross annual salary, that is before tax, take 70% and say, well, that's about what my lifestyle is going to cost in retirement. Or if you think you've got some other, you know, figure in mind, do that. But at any rate, we'll take that. And then we have to subtract from that the sum of all of those pension-style benefits we get from the FERS pension, from Social Security, Reserve, or National Guard retirement, any other retirement benefits that are coming in, particularly when they're coming from the federal government or some very reliable source of regular income. Now, in most cases, we're going to have a shortfall between that high level of income that we would like to have and how much regular income is coming in from the federal government. That shortfall is what we want to make up with an income plan from the TSP. Now, I call that the shortfall. That's the shortfall, all right? And the idea is if you keep about 10 years worth of that shortfall in the thrift savings plan and then move the bulk of your thrift to a really decent financial planning package like Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or Fidelity or any of those ones that have very low fees that allow you to use a lot of index funds. And, of course, we're going to be setting things up once we get there with that money. Meanwhile, back at the thrift, now that I've moved out, I've taken my one-time partial lump sum, and that's TSP Form 77. I moved that money over. And then what I do with the rest of the money that's in the thrift is I now ask for a series of substantially equal monthly payments under TSP Form 70. And by doing that, I will actually start taking my money from the thrift. Oops, I forgot an important step. I had to interfund transfer all of my thrift that was left into the G fund. That's right. I'm going to be using the G fund for income. And how much are these payments going to be? That's my shortfall. Roughly 10 years of income, not counting interest, will be in the G fund, and I'll be using that regularly. Why 10 years, you say? 10 years because 10 years is what, on average, when we look at long-term markets, they start to settle down to their longer-term rates of return. Also, just sort of from a mathematical perspective, 10 years is when we start to see the advantage of compounding interest really start to make a difference. So in other words, we're giving that IRA 10 years to get its act together. And meanwhile, we'll be living on the G fund. And if interest rates go up, then the G fund goes up with it.
Very good. I actually was listening to the radio. I'm not making this up. And they used that 10-year example this weekend. And some of the callers, what do you mean 10 years? And it made perfect sense. Just like you said, it takes a look at the troughs and the valleys of the market, and it protects you and let the other be more long-term.
Right.
And so you don't get hit altogether. You've got this money set aside. And that's a lot of money for most people.
It is. Yeah. It is. And, of course, naturally, it doesn't mean that 10 years, we're now ready to start spending that necessarily, all of it. We're looking really for, 30 or 40 or more years of potential growth. The longer we can keep money in the markets, the long-term markets, the more closely they're going to resemble their long-term averages.
30 to 40 years at retirement? I want your genes.
Yeah. A lot of people are living a lot longer these days, so we have to be cognizant of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully you and I. All right. Was that number one?
Well, that was actually number one through three. Like right. I said, I wanted to do this kind of in chunks. So step one was determine your income needs and develop what the shortfall is. Step two, do the one-time partial lump sum to a mostly stock-based traditional IRA. And then step three was interfund transfer the remaining balance in the thrift into the G fund. And then submit that series of equal monthly payments, which is essentially equal to the shortfall. There's your income plan. Now you've got the bulk of it over there for growth. Now, I did mention that the money that you move to the IRA would be mostly in stocks, but not completely. You would like to still have a little bit of money in a cash account at the at the IRA, a little bit of money in a cash account. Why? In case you have an emergency. If there's some kind of emergency comes up and you need $10,000, well, you can't really go back to the thrift and say, okay, thrift, give me $10,000 and keep on with the equal monthly payments. Not at this time. What happens with the thrift savings plan is that you get the series of equal monthly payments. If you need to, you know, suddenly, you know, get some very large amount of money, you have to stop and take the rest of your money in one final installment. Not so good. Right. So the thrift has got that weakness again. We don't have that ability to do on-demand withdrawals. We can do a one-time partial lump sum, and then we can do one more, which is the rest of it, which is not as much fun as we would like to have. Whereas with the IRA, remember, we do have on-demand withdrawals. So if I need some cash in a hurry, I've got it in my cash account at the IRA. Sure, I need to pay tax on it, but, you know, I've got that figured into my request. In addition, I might also want to have a little bit of cash in the IRA to beat some occasional tax liabilities. Where would that be coming from? Now we're getting into the other steps here. So the other liability would come from taking a portion, as I mentioned before, a small portion of that traditional IRA and converting it into a Roth IRA, preferably in the same exact fund at the same exact firm. This way you pay no cost involved in that. Because there's nothing bought or sold.
Is there a lag time somebody needs? Let's say somebody's older, like me, and I'm going to put money into a Roth at my age. What should I look forward to as to where it made sense or didn't make sense? Does it take 10 years? Does it take 12 years? Of course, it depends on the market, but yeah. Is there a rule of thumb?
Well, again, you know, I find that that 10 years is kind of a nice thing for looking at long-term market fluctuations, you know, to kind of level out. But instead, remember that one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to meet a tax law, which is that we have to, in order to get tax-free growth in a Roth account, we have to have a Roth account for 5 or more years. So if we can establish, you know, a transaction by converting some money to the Roth, no matter how small it is, then we're already, you know, getting the clock to tick. If we've never had any Roth before, if we didn't do Roth TSP, if we made too much money and couldn't set up a Roth IRA when we were working, we can always set one up as soon as we retire when we do this transaction, make a small conversion into the Roth, and then this will allow us to meet that five-year rule. You mentioned it earlier. One of the key things we have to look out for, required minimum distributions. When it happens at 70 and a half years of age and every year after that, in the TSP, the problem with RMD, required minimum distributions, is that I have to take it, but it's going to come out pro rata across all the funds that I'm in. Again, if I'm in a stock fund and happens to be down that year, then I'm taking money from a down account. I don't want to do that. So, of course, naturally, this is what kind of is allowing us to use that G fund, which can never be negative. Now, in an IRA, it works differently. In an IRA, when it hits 70 and a half, they look at the entire account balance and divide it by the IRS life expectancy factor. I have to take that amount out, but I may take it from any fund or funds or assets I have in my IRA.
Help me with that one. Let's say in my IRA, looking forward or planning for required minimum distributions, which at 70 and a half is about 3.6%, but it goes up a little bit each year.
Yes.
Okay, so if I'm looking at that and I might have four investments, I want one in kind of near-term cash.
Absolutely.
With regards to the IRA world now.
Correct.
So that I can take what I have to take out of the cash fund, even though it's somehow influenced by the other three funds. Because, like you say, the funds together, all four, is what you use as the target to take X percent out.
Right.
But it doesn't have to come out all four. It
does
come
not.
Out just
right.
one.
Okay. Again, that's sort of like that a bit of that on-demand withdrawal capability. I have to take a withdrawal after 7.5, but it doesn't say where I have to take the withdrawal from within that IRA. It just has to be from that IRA.
Okay.
Now, of course, and I'm sorry, I just lost the train of thought slightly on the yes, of course. Why am I converting money to a Roth IRA? Because the Roth IRA has no required minimum distributions ever. And so now it would under TSP Roth or Roth 401ks, they do suffer from required minimum distribution. So I really kind of don't want to be using the TSP Roth that much at that age, but getting that over into a Roth IRA, even better. And if I can start converting more and more of those assets in my traditional IRA to a Roth, then the more I convert, the less I have to do that calculation of required minimum distribution.
And if you do a little estate planning,
right,
that goes to heirs, and it continues its tax-free nature.
Oh, yes. The Roth IRAs are excellent for estate planning purposes. And I think you had Karen Schaefer on not long ago.
We had the Schaefer twins on a couple weeks ago.
You had both of them. Oh, wow, that's great. Well, they're great. They're great folks, and I've always loved them very much. And they put out great information. And I know that Karen has done a lot of work with estate planning, and I'm sure that she mentions the value of a Roth IRA for estate planning purposes. I find that the Roth IRA has got so many advantages besides tax-free growth, besides no required minimum distributions, besides no income tax on the beneficiaries. But I find that it also allows for greater ease in setting up your asset allocation. Uh-oh, that sounded kind of heavy. What I mean by having greater ease in setting up your asset allocation, what assets do I have where? I want to have some sort of a balanced kind of a allocation. Well, by having the stocks in my Roth, that is the best place to have stocks because A, they grow the most over the long haul, so that's all tax-free. B, that's not subject to required minimum distributions, so I will not be subject to, the market's down and I have to take a loss from a down account by actually removing money. So I love those things. Greatest thing that was ever invented.
Okay, what number are we on, Dave? I'm lost.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see where we are at. So we were actually talking about all kinds of neat things that were in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, and even 8 and 9. And this is going to be written up on a column coming out very soon on the NITP website. So there's the monthly column. And I understand that this is going to be in one of the next few. I'm not sure which month, this okay. month, next month, whatever. Just thought I'd put a plug in for the NITP column, of course, and yeah. for my own effort to support it.
Okay. And if you wanted to see the 10 prior to, you can email us at 4,
sure.
F-O-R,
sure.
your, Y-O-U-R,
right.
benefit at
yeah.
NITP, I-N-C.
Right.
.com. And we'll send it to you.
This is awesome. Yeah, of course we'll send it to them. We'll post it up there later today.
All right.
And it makes a lot of sense. And I think as you read through it, you can see that nothing weird is going on. We're not telling you to get into derivatives or anything, or especially give your money over to wealth management advisors who could be taking 3% of your balance for really no
work
at all.
Just make sure you do your homework if you go there, right?
Yeah,
what's
right.
your history? Okay, so what are we on, step 9?
Yeah, actually, what we've done is we've talked about setting up this money in two different pots, the TSP for income purposes and the G fund, the IRA, both traditional and Roth for long-term growth. Now, the idea is that at some point, you're going to get to the end of that 10 years of money in the TSP with the G fund. So this is when you would want to take some of the traditional, not the Roth, but the traditional IRA, and move assets back to the TSP. This is a really nice feature. Turns out, the regulation says that if you have at least $200 in your TSP account, you can move money back. This is even after you retire. I've been taking a series of equal monthly payments. I'm starting to get down. Maybe I've got about a year or 2 years left of that. Clearly, I have more than $200. You can use TSP Form 60, that's 60, file that with my IRA company and have X dollars of assets go back over to the TSP. What am I doing with that? Replenishing my G fund.
Okay.
More income.
And of course, the only money that can go over there is fully taxable money out of the
IRA. That's correct. So it can't be the Roth. It has to be the traditional.
Bingo.
Right.
All right. Andrew is telling us you need to switch off of point A and go to point B. Point B is a message from our friends at WEPA.
All right.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WEPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WEPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WEPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WEPA today at waepa.org. WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to TSP Withdrawal Strategies, featuring Dave Redden, federal benefits expert, economist, thrift expert, financial planner as well. Closet financial planner, right?
I don't know about closet.
Okay, anyway, Dave, right before we were almost to step 10 of your 10-step program, and then what we're going to do, we've got some emails that have come in, as well as we'll open up the phones. But do 10, and then we'll go that way.
Right. Actually, so again, rather than have too much confusion for the listeners, we've been kind of grouping some of these things together rather than try to read off 10 steps and have people try to take notes or go like, what was step 7? No, don't worry about that. We can always put that on the website. But instead, let's think about this. Now we're starting to get to the point where G Fund is getting pretty well depleted, not only from the money that we've put back in, but because the required minimum distributions are starting to get pretty heavy. As you mentioned, you know, at 70.5, it's about 3.6%. But by the time you get into your mid to late 80s, oh boy.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's really so pretty much that's going to be getting depleted. Now you've got a lot of money, hopefully, that you've made in that Roth IRA, mostly in stock index funds. But what you're going to do is obviously take some of those shares and redeem them into cash accounts. Now, that money, of course, since it's Roth, cannot come back to the TSP, which means you're going to be in a cash management account at the IRA company. Now, currently, cash management accounts are paying like 0.17 or something like that. So nothing like that G fund. But now you don't have any tax liability whatsoever. Coincidentally, as you're going to be getting cost of living adjustments on your retirement benefit, Social Security, it is possible that you could be, at that point in time, actually in a higher tax bracket than you were right before you retired. No kidding, because the COLAs wind up increasing your perceived wealth. It's called bracket creep. The IRS rarely indexes their tax brackets often. So you could be in a higher tax bracket, meaning that that money in the Roth is really looking fabulous for you. Now, obviously, we're going to be using some of that for income. But of course, as we're getting even older, we're going to start converting more and more of that into income. Rate of return becomes less important when the time is getting shorter. But we still would like to maintain, for estate planning purposes, we would still like to maintain some of that money in Roth IRA in stock funds. And you know what we mean by estate planning purposes, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yes.
But one should do it.
Right.
All righty. Let me read one of the emails. We have three that have come in this morning. And one says, I'm not going to use the dollar amount. I have X dollars in my TSP account and Y dollars in my Roth account. Collectively, the numbers in this case would be 3/4 of this entirety of the money, the TSP and the Roth, is in the TSP, and 1/4 of it is in a Roth IRA. I plan to withdraw from my TSP first, which would be fully taxable, as you mentioned earlier, at $25,000 per year until the age of 80, and then start withdrawing from my Roth IRA tax-free. Is this a good strategy?
You know, I think that the quality of this listener, the person that sent in this email, is that they are actually on to the 10-step plan, whether they know it or not. This is actually very prudent. So, you know, I guess like minds think alike in this regard. They're looking at income from the TSP because they realize the G fund is just awesome for that, as well as they're looking for the growth over in the IRA side. Now, what they mentioned was that about $25,000 a year coming out of the TSP for income, obviously fully taxable. My one thought about that could be, and again, I don't know what the age of the individual is, but they're talking about taking income until age 80 from the TSP. Once they hit 70 and a half years of age, their required minimum distribution may be around 25K initially, but it could start moving up rather rapidly. So they might want to think about just how long that's going to last, given the RMD table, which is very easy to get right off the IRS website, or probably off the NITP website for that matter. Now, I would be a little concerned about having that much money left in the TSP. That's a fairly large chunk. And if it's all in the G fund, then it's going to be kind of limited in terms of rate of return. So I would think about moving that money, you know, some of that money over. I think that's way in excess of what needs to be left at the TSP.
All righty. We have a phone call.
Yes. My question is, the S&P 500 versus the total stock index fund, which has been doing better?
That's a great question. Obviously, you know, when you say what is doing better, you mean over many, many years.
Yes.
Right. Now, of course, we'll find that the total stock market index has got a higher expense ratio when you try to get that at any of the other investment firms than the C fund would have. Again, you know, that's because we're only talking about 500 different companies to buy and sell shares from, whereas with the total stock market extended, we're talking about quite a few more. It's a great index fund. It should do very, very well. In the thrift savings plan, that would be the equivalent of the C and S funds combined.
Right.
Used to be known as the Wilshire 5000.
Right.
And so, I find that to be that's a very exciting blend. I like that a lot.
Yeah, the reason why I'm asking is even if you're not doing it, you have a separate IRA. That's what I'm thinking. If you have a separate IRA,
right,
then you either pick the S&P 500 or the total stock.
Right. Well, why would you want to pick?
Well, I mean, if you can't get into the government thing, in other words, like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, at the IRA, why would you limit yourself to just one or the other?
Well, over a long period. You know,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, 20, 30 years.
Right. The advantage of the S&P 500 is it's going to have, although a slightly lower average long-term return,
right.
It has the lows are not nearly as low as you would have in total stock market extended. Mm-hmm. So when you get to that point where you either have to take required minimum distributions right. or move any money back to the TSP, the probability of an extremely negative year would be much diminished in an S&P 500.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be about the main thing. And, of course, slightly higher fees than the total stock market extended. I like both, though.
Yeah. Well, that answered my question. Thank you.
You're right. Thanks for going.
Okay, let me just do the total stock market fund for people like me that are going, huh? So it really is the largest 500 companies in the United States.
The total stock market extended would be the S&P 500 plus the remaining companies that we used to call the Wilshire 4500.
So it's the biggest 5,000?
The biggest 5,000, yeah. Yeah, right. So okay. Not 500, 5,000.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's usually a statistical sample of those.
Okay.
To minimize some of the trading expenses.
Great. Another one of the emails came in and says, does the 4% withdrawal rate still apply? What's the 4% withdrawal rate, first of all?
Yeah, well, generally, when people are mentioning this, they're talking about, you know, if I can have money invested for retirement and make it so that if I take 4% distribution per year, that it will never run out. I'll never run out of money. I'll be able to average 4% rate of return. Does it still apply? Well, I mean, it's just math, so there's no regulation against it or anything. I would be looking at trying to do better than 4%, honestly, because, you know, I'm thinking about seriously about giving money after I'm gone to charitable organizations, you know, like the Appalachian Trail or the church or
plug.
The synagogue or perhaps Bob Lyons.
Yes.
I'm looking at better than a 4% rate of return. And the plan that, you know, this 10-step plan, what this does is it would generate, depending on one's balances, probably generate significantly better than a 4% rate of return over the long haul. So does it still apply? Yeah, it's math.
I think the question here is the 4% rule over a long period of time, might not make 4%, and we're living longer. Oh. And so people have been scratching their heads on it, and they talk about now maybe the 3%. But it all focuses on what Dave just said. You have to make as much or more on the underlying investments for to happen.
Yeah, you know, clearly 4% would be far in excess of what you could get out of the G fund today.
Yeah.
We don't know what, you know, the future is going to hold with the G fund. You know, Congress is looking at it, et cetera, et cetera. Even if Congress does make some sort of dramatic cut in, quote unquote, the G fund rate of return, it still is a great place to have money. Again, remember the safety features I mentioned about the thrift. I think that they're really excellent at guarding one's money.
Okay, we better guard our reputation. We have somebody on the phone. I hope they're not getting too anxious.
If a FERS employee retires on December 31, can any of his or her lump sum annual leave payment be put into a Roth IRA?
That's a really great question, sir. You know, obviously, I'm sitting across from one of the greatest tax planners of all time. And although I've been doing all the work, I should let him do some today, but I could do a quick answer for you. Well, we know, first of all, that the lump sum annual leave would be received out in January of the next tax year. It would be considered wage earnings from a job. So if one would generally be eligible by adjusted gross income limitations to make a new contribution to a Roth IRA, you could do so. But the maximum that is for this year is $5,500, unless one is age 50 or older, and then you can do $6,500. If you're married, even if your spouse doesn't work, if they're over age 50, then in theory you're doing $13,000, $6,500 for each. But you would not be able to take the entire annual leave payment, and, you know, assuming that it's like 400 hours of annual leave, and be able to dump that all into an IRA or a Roth IRA, unfortunately.
One other point. Let's say that you take Dave's good advice and your income is too high to be able to fund a Roth. There's still another way to do it, although it's not necessarily guaranteed, not from a legal standpoint. It's called a backdoor Roth. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Sure. All righty, Dave. This third email. What recommendations would you give the TSP board to improve how the savings plan is run? And I don't know that we could tell them how to run it any better.
Yeah.
But secondly, what fund would you add to the TSP? I think that's know this one individual.
I've often said, boy, if I was elected king, then what changes would I make in the thrift? and in fact, I just love the way that the thrift is set up. I love the way it's managed. It's really doing a great job. I understand completely the dramatic increase in expenses that would be required to turn them into, for all intents and purposes, a bank, a retirement savings bank. That would be very expensive. That would be great, because to have on-demand withdrawals and do everything at the thrift would be awesome, but a little, I think, not possible. Now, what fund? Well, that's an interesting thing. As it turns out, the external mutual fund window, which is something that Congress authorized the thrift board that they could do in the TSP Enhancements Act of June of 2009. The thrift has not actually pursued it completely yet, but they're looking more and more into it. Greg, who was on the show three weeks ago, has said, you know, that's something we're looking at. And so that could answer the question for some folks about, I would like some other funds, the external mutual fund window at the thrift. Now, they're going to have to talk more about it, but we know that under the legislation that whatever expenses would be involved in doing that, or risk, would be borne by the participant who chooses to do it.
All righty. We could take one more caller, although we only have 2 minutes. So maybe we ought to just summarize in the last 2 minutes and give me your best shot at what you described in paraphrased 1 minute terms.
Okay, sure. Well, you know, the biggest issue is that when an individual retires from the federal government and they have a thrift account, what can they do with this money? And there's just a myriad of possibilities, almost too many possibilities. It becomes information overload for a lot of folks. And so we know that, you know, based on someone's needs, someone's income that they're going to have, are they CSRS, are they FERS, that, you know, for a lot of folks, the biggest issue is, how can I get growth and income out of my TSP for retirement? And so what we suggested here is that we're going to be using the income side from the TSP and the G fund, and the growth side would be what we move over to an IRA.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty, great. Well put. Probably have another 30 seconds or so. We want to thank everybody for listening. This show is archived. So tell your friends about it, as well as the other shows at NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com. Click on For Your Benefit, and you can go back and listen to it probably for 2 years. Anyway, thanks again, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Bob.
And thanks, Dave. That was great.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.